You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Millennial Money Podcast. Today, we have a very special guest for you, Graham Stephan.
Hey, welcome, guys.
Spencer, what's up, man?
Hey, Spencer, it's Guys here.
We got the guy who exposes all of the fake gurus, all the frauds, the scams in the industry, and I watch all of your videos, and I lose faith in humanity. I'm just seeing how many scams are out there and how many people are just taking advantage.
It's unfortunate because there's always victims at the end of the day, right? It's fun to kind of make the entertaining videos, but realistically, when you're talking about fraud and some of the unfortunate realities of what we just saw over the last 2 years, PPP fraud, mortgage fraud.
I mean, did you cover that, PPP fraud?
Not too much, only some of the stories, but this is very prevalent. All the guys on Instagram getting the Lambos, and you go, wait a second, that guy was in a Toyota the last year, now he's in a Lambo, and I don't know what he does for a living.
Yeah, did you hear that the car industry is already going through like a 2008-style recession? No one really is talking about that, other than like the car-oriented channels, like Lucky, but... Man,
I started looking into that because I heard on Lucky's channel that repos are going up. Yeah. A lot of people were lending on cars based on really high values to the point where they drive now and they're immediately underwater, like way more significant than if you bought a new car and like, okay, sure, you lose 20%. But they're lending on used cars at such high values that it's just not sustainable.
How do you figure that banks just gave that kind of loans to people with, like, let's say you have two people in a household, they're both on stimulus checks, let's say they're each making $4,096K a year, and the bank's like, sure, or the dealership, whoever's giving them the loan is like, sure, go have your $50,000 Mercedes. Like, how does that happen?
Incentives. Yeah. What are their incentives?
True,
to write loans?
True.
Oh, it works today.
We package don't even them worry up, about, sell them off,
We don't have to worry 2 years down the road. I'm actually interested what you guys think. So there's a lot of rumblings now, some idea of a recession, correction, whatever you want to call it. If there's one indicator that you feel most confident in, where if you could have data, just forget about how you access this data, if you could have any data to give you a confidence meter, of a high confidence meter that will either be in a recession soon or not, and I'll start. I would be really interested with car repos. Like, if we could have the real data.
I thought you were about to say exotic dancers. Or Cardi B. Did you see she tweeted about a recession?
Yep.
All right, no, I'm joking.
Yeah, that's probably a bad sign. But that would be really interesting. Like, what data metric could you have access to? Car repos seem to be the first one. For me, that would be really interesting because people are going to get rid of their cars or stop paying their car payment before mortgage and everything else.
I have my own little metric, but I don't know how accurate it is, but it's pretty accurate. Jim Cramer doesn't think we're going into a recession. No, I'm just kidding.
It's just opposite him.
Just everything. Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi was not buying this month. Recession confirmed.
There we go. No, but seriously, he's got a pretty interesting record. He's like, I think I'm the only one in the economy right now who doesn't think there's a recession.
When you look at Jim Cramer, though, I did an analysis, and I think it was something like 55% of the time he was wrong a few months. No, seriously. So in the first 3 days, it's something called the Jim Cramer effect, where he talks about a stock, and it goes up an average of 3 to 5% higher than it would have otherwise. So he does have a short-term effect on the stock price. It does return back to normal after about a week. But yeah, long term, he does not have the best success rate. It may as well be, you know, flipping a coin or going to a casino with the house advantage.
There would be a really interesting phenomenon in life if someone had a certain timeline where they could make predictions, and after a certain point, if you're below 60% or 70%, you're just no
canceled.
Longer. Yeah, you know what? You're not good enough.
Yeah,
we're gonna move on to
that's the thing
else.
With a lot of predictions is that, like you said, Andre, it's useless without a timeline. Yeah. And you could say, "Well, I'm not wrong because there haven't been enough time yet."
Right.
And then 100 years could go by, and then like, what's the opportunity cost?
I was right. Exactly.
Yeah.
What's the opportunity?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe 200 years later, it's like, no, but I was right. I called it here. I do think there should be a timeline. It seems to be 5 to 10 years. Well, it depends, I guess, what you're calling about. But yeah. Like stocks could be 5 to 10 years. I think a recession probably a year. It's got to be 18 months, 2 years max.
Yeah. Well, one thing you guys do really well that I very much appreciate is that you aren't trying to be the experts when you aren't. Mm-hmm. And you're not coming out and saying, everyone, this is exactly what's going to happen. You're saying, here's a bunch of data. Mm-hmm. I have accumulated a bunch of resources. And there's a lot of times I'll watch your stuff where I'm like, whoa, I never even thought it even looked there, right? So the real value is being able to look at a lot of different resources and package it up into a solid 14-minute video. And it's very educational, but you never get the vibe that it's like, Andre said this one thing and he's going to stand by it.
Right. Well, I appreciate it. Yeah.
I think that's good for everyone.
A lot of what I do in the research, like when you're like, oh, I didn't know this. It's partially because I didn't know it. And I'm like, this is interesting. And as I'm researching, I have a question about this question. And you go deeper and deeper and deeper. And you're like, I didn't even know what I didn't know. So, and I don't want to be that guy.
I appreciate it also because we're in this game. Mm-hmm. At this point, I think we all know if we wanted to go the clickbait route, we could get 1 out of 10 every video if we really wanted to, especially when you're talking about economy. It's like, we're going to experience a crash tomorrow. And Robert Kiyosaki is someone I think follows that path, which he's done a great book, a lot of good things. However, every single video is about the greatest recession our lives will ever see is coming next month.
Right.
Hoard Bitcoin. And it's so much easier to get views that way. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't really appreciate that path to media versus what I just explained with you.
I think the problem with that path, though, is that it only works for so long. It's like a short term duration. And then people just ignore you. And then you're just the boy who cried wolf.
You have to no keep going worse.
Yeah.
You have to keep making it bigger
and
bigger.
Hurricane is
going to
be the tsunami.
And then you go on Twitter and then you become, just keep getting worse.
And then eventually you get it right. Just like people say, like a broken clock's right twice a day. Eventually you get it right. Yeah. You look like a genius. But I just don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, if we're talking about economic indicators for a recession, what I actually found really interesting was that the one thing that so far has been somewhat correct is when you look at business conferences, the rate of business, once they start to slow down, it seems to be a recession comes.
Interesting.
So that was one of the oddball things, but
anecdotally,
I've seen watch sales coming down. Mm. So people are spending less money on watches. The people who have a lot of watches are selling them now. Same thing with really high-end cars. A lot of people with high-end cars are saying, now is the time where I want to sell these. When you look at Bring a Trailer, it's a fantastic resource. I've never seen so many 500,000 plus cars just being sold. Never seen that many. And right now they're selling, but for how much longer? Now, I always think, what do they know? If they're selling this, you know, Bugatti or this, you know, Ferrari, LaFerrari or whatever, like, why are they selling at this price?
Yeah.
I'm just curious. They don't need the money, but why?
It's interesting. I've noticed a lot of my wealthier friends that are like far wealthier than me. They started
talking about
real estate. Graham's one of those people. Yeah. People that are they slowly start to offload those assets. And that kind of makes sense because when those assets hit all-time highs and interest rates get to crazy amount, then of course you're going to want to get rid of it because then at that point, who's going to be able to afford it?
Do you believe the concept of following the money, meaning look at what rich people are doing? And rich, I would designate as maybe 50 million or more net worth.
No. If you look at Nancy Pelosi necessarily, she's buying Roblox call options at like $100 back in November. I mean, I think you could look to anyone and say they were right for X amount of time, and there's always going to be one.
It's very interesting in life how you can be an expert in one thing. Let's say I'm a professional baseball player and I made $100 million in my life.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you start talking about the economy or investing, and people immediately in our life will look up to that person and say, this person is really savvy because they have a lot of money. Well, did they get all their money from one path or another path? And that's always a really difficult thing to...
No, that's a good distinction too.
Because I'm in the same way. Like, I make my money on YouTube, not investing. And so I try not to ever be the advice guy.
Same.
I try to be.
You were doing really well at real estate, even before you were like diving that far into YouTube. But like, you were doing
lost a lot of money too.
But you were house hacking. You were renting out bedrooms.
Yes.
And doing like a hotel-esque sort of deal.
I'm pivoting a little bit.
Yeah.
Since we last talked.
Yeah.
I was all in on house hacking, had some headaches.
Yeah.
And now I'm pivoting.
So here's what's interesting. I can relate with that because I used to do an Airbnb business. So I used to sublease. I used to lease for about $1,200 a month. And I would rent out one room on Airbnb. And in 1 month, it was enough to cover my lease and then some.
It's great, isn't it?
It was amazing. Now they're shutting it down. But I'm curious, how's your house hacking going?
It was great in many ways. I'm actually going to start with something that is unexpected, and that is an empathy for humanity. I grew up middle class. My parents are doing really well now. They live in the 1%, yada, yada, yada. Been around
your
wealth.
Your parents?
Yeah, been around wealth. So,
Hold on, slow this down. What do your parents do?
In a minute.
All right.
So being in the house that I've been, if you guys were ever around, I'll show you, but it's not nice. It's Eastern and Russell, so if you know, like, 6-lane road, it's fine. It's 6-lane road right on the main street.
I know,
like,
exactly.
We're talking about,
like,
homeless.
Yeah.
I mean, every problem under the sun. The tenants that I've had at that property have a lot of difficulty, and it was something that I was exposed to that I'd never been exposed to before, and that is difficulty making payments, stress. At the time, I was riding the bus 4 hours to and from work. Like, I was in major financial calamity, and at the time, I just started to understand the world a lot better, and I felt like that played well into my content. I felt like I had a better view of the world at large. And so that was a major benefit of that property, is just being around people that were struggling. And it made me appreciate what I had. And at the time, I couldn't even afford new shoes. Mm. I was eating rice and beans every night. Yeah. You know what? I was like, man, I'm actually appreciative because YouTube's making $4,000 a month or something, and they're struggling to pay rent, $500 or $600 a month in rent. So anyway, that was an interesting experience there. But yeah, that was my first property. I had ramped up to 3 properties now, $13,000 a month, if you count my room, if you count, like, the market rent for my room. So yeah, like, there's real money to be made.
Awesome.
I think it's the best way to start in real estate
for
anyone who, like, wants to get started.
That's really great.
Yeah. Now, you know what we should do is call Jeremy really quick, just so people know he's still a part of the podcast. We didn't kick him out.
No, or did we?
Or did we? No. Let's call Jeremy really quick, see what he's up to. Let me just record this. Then we could get right back into that. Hey. Yeah, we want to see what you're up to.
Oh, I took a vacation day. You didn't know?
Where are you?
I'm HR. Today was a vacation day for me.
Yeah, where are you, Jeremy?
Did he have a vacation day?
I'm supposed to have vacation day.
Are you?
Wait, hold on. let me show you where I'm at here. Let's see.
Please don't tell me.
Oh my gosh.
he's at the TTCF frozen food aisle.
Why are you there, Jeremy?
Yeah. Well, I'm just, I got nothing else to do. I took tonight off from Millennial Money, so I figured I might as well just come, you know, customer watch. So,
are you striking any conversations with anybody? Trying to buy Tattoo Chef?
Unfortunately, no. No one wants to come down this aisle, so it is what it is.
It looks kind of empty. Jeremy's going to single-handedly empty all the shelves himself.
Somebody's got to do it, man.
Somebody's got to do it.
How many people have bought... Have people bought any of them lately or no?
Well, I've been standing here for 3 minutes and no, I'm the only one in the past 3 minutes. So bearish TCCF.
Do you think that maybe you're scaring them off because you're there? If you hit somewhere else? Oh, wow.
There's no one.
That's a recession. Look, it's empty.
That's his indicator. If no one's at Target.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, that's legit
Jeremy,
empty.
There's nobody there.
Are you the only
one in the store?
I might be the only person in the store.
Feels like an episode of Zombies.
Wow.
The Call of Duty.
Jeremy, what time is it over there?
It's same time as Vegas. Yeah. So about 7.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Recession confirmed.
Confirmed, yeah.
Thank you, Jeremy, for giving us this tidbit. How about this? Text me when you leave and let us know if anyone bought Tattoo Chef.
Okay, that sounds like a deal.
All right.
Thanks guys.
See you, man. All right, back to that question. You're like, oh, my parents are part of the 1%. Let me skip over that, right?
Yeah, the neighborhood, I would say, the area and the state they live in.
Okay.
I'm going to leave it broad.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very nice area.
What business are they in?
Golf course, lake community, financial advisor.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's what helped me.
Wow.
At least understand.
So they're financial advisors.
That is, yeah.
Okay. For wealthier clients.
Yeah.
Got it. Very cool.
Hmm.
That's great.
Yeah. We have some cool neighbors.
Yeah.
So it's nice being around it. I think there's many benefits to being around that. Number one, it's something to strive for. You feel like it's real.
Well, let me ask you this. What inspired the whole kind of model of your YouTube channel to expose the gurus?
There was no real intention. At the time, I wasn't growing at all. I was doing some like real estate, just wanted to follow what I was doing, the decisions I was making. And I started noticing a lot of these ads from gurus, and I just wanted to have an objective look at, are these people real? It didn't feel real to me. And I didn't know if what they were actually doing, what business were they running? And so I had a series called Authentic or Charlatan, where I wanted to actually break down. That was Graham. Mm-hmm. One of the first episodes was Graham.
That's right. I remember that.
It was a really big moment in my YouTube career because I had about 8,000 subs. And at the point, it's like, okay, there's something here, but no one knows who you are. And then someone's like, dude, Graham posted on his Instagram about
you.
And I was like,
I thought it was a really fair assessment. And that was, was like really 3 years ago, 2 years ago, something like that.
And, you know,
I thought
funny
it was really good
too. I was so broke at the time that I had to borrow $2,500 from a buddy to make a payment that day. And so I'm like freaking out. Thankfully this buddy of mine who I just met, like, loaned me $2,500 to make a payment to not go really broke. And then that happened like that night.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh my gosh, I was able to make my payments. And then you posted that. I was like, oh man, maybe there's something.
I got
to
share more videos. I used to do that all the time. When I saw a really good video, I'd share it on Instagram. I just stopped.
It was much appreciated. Like, when you're a small creator, you don't think anyone's watching.
Right.
And then when someone cool, it's like, wait, you watched?
Yeah.
I should be doing that. I think you should too, Andre. I think it's just fun. You do?
It's great.
I don't do it very often, but I'll do it sometimes.
Your story was so cool because the reason why I told it the way I did is I thought it was really interesting to tell it from current day.
Yeah.
And go backwards, if you remember.
Yeah.
And so I told it, there's a movie, a Christopher Nolan movie called Memento. Have you seen the movie?
Mm-mm.
Neither. Oh, it's one of the best movies ever made, and it's told in reverse.
Wow.
It's really well done. So I was just like, hey, you know what? Creatively, I just want to do something differently.
Was there a point on your YouTube channel where you saw it kind of take off?
December 2nd, 2019.
What happened?
I like you know the exact date.
What happened?
I released a video on Dan Lok. It was the first one. He was interesting. He was blown up at the time. I didn't know much about him.
That was the guy that would show up in like a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
He had
a series, Boston and Bentley.
Yeah.
I remember when he first came on, he was captivating. I looked at him, I'm like, who is this guy? He was so different from everyone else on YouTube, and he was in the back of a Bentley, and I just remember him swearing a lot. And, you know, I didn't think it was necessarily any bad advice that he was giving in those videos.
No.
But I remember your video blew up. Was it him in the red suit, was it? Yeah.
Yep.
Remember
the
thumbnail?
I've made a couple. Yeah. I've made a couple. But no, one of the benefits of very fortunately being around money is you see what it really looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many different ways. If you're young money, you're going to be flashing, have the Lambo, of course. But generally the old money, like the real wealth, is blue jeans
and a
shirt like this that's like
$50
or something, and then a Mercedes.
Yep.
And that's wealth, and there's no flashiness to it. All of my parents' friends, you meet them and they're very, very humble. You would have no idea. One of my friends in high school that we actually had his prom at his house, the after party, it was like a $10 million house on the water. We're talking 40,000 square feet style, just massive. You would have no idea.
Yeah.
We're talking like real wealth. And so coming from that, it's like, okay, I can see you build a business. Over time, you save up, you invest well, just like what you guys preach. And that's real wealth. And then all of a sudden you start getting these YouTube ads and it's all about flash and how much you can make so much money so quickly. And I'm like, this doesn't feel right. So to really answer your question, it was at that moment where I wanted to just objectively look, are these guys legitimate or not?
Yeah.
And so releasing that video, it was very clear right from the start that there was more views. Second video was about Robert Kiyosaki.
Yep.
More views. And I was like, okay, I got something here. Tai Lopez, of course, was now, the next one.
As you were making these videos, did you get any pushback from anyone or from the people that you were making the videos about?
No, I was too small at the time. I didn't really have many subscribers. And so I grew fast, relatively speaking, to where I was, but we're still talking 5,000 subscribers. I don't remember the exact first time someone pushed back, but it was actually a really important moment. Bam Man Kevo. You ever heard of him?
Mm-mm.
He's a pretty big influencer. Yeah, he copyright struck my video immediately, like within an hour. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. It hadn't happened before. But it was a moment where I kind of realized I needed to pivot a little bit.
Right.
And does that mean he you get a strike on your channel? Got
it.
Okay.
To be fair, I had used a lot of his videos.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think he was in the right.
Okay.
It's interesting because there's so many approaches to, I guess, getting people interested into investing.
Yeah.
And I always felt like what resonated with me the most is when extremely wealthy people live even below the means of the middle class. And that's just been fascinating to me. Like, even with your 20 cent iced coffees, and like, there's things that I do that are ridiculous and they make no sense. You know, like, I was living with roommates, like $1,200 a month when I was making seven figures. Like, it's just, I love that. There's something that's fascinating.
You know
to
what
me
it is?
That.
I feel like there's a bit of a trend that went in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we like opposites. So from what I've seen, at least through like 2005 to 2010, it seems like this extravagance, like this really wealthy lifestyle of private jets and Rolls Royces and Ferraris was the thing to strive for, and the Lamborghinis, that it almost the exact opposite of that became cool, where it's like you could afford that, but you choose not to because you look at the long term, like right. that's not sustainable unless you have a lot of money. I listened to an interview with it was Ryan Trahan on Colin and Samir's podcast. It was one of the best podcasts I've listened to. And Colin and Samir ask Ryan Trahan, a lot of people on YouTube are spending a lot of money, like Eric or Mr. Beast. There's this style where it's like $100,000 to $500,000 a video. Ryan Trahan did the exact opposite of that, and he's growing just as much, if not more, by spending a penny. Mm. And like, that's his video of like how little money I could spend. I'm right. thinking of that. That's genius.
Yeah. No,
so I think we
really
go
cool.
back and forth, and we've gone from the extravagance down to a penny.
Do you think any of that has to do with the fact that millennials were not exactly set up as a generation to necessarily be wealthy? Like, not like our
They've
parents were exactly. So I think there's something that's relatable where you see people that are like Graham, for example, it's like, oh, he's a multimillionaire, but he's happy with less, which is inspiring, because then it's like, I don't need to make a ton of money to be happy in life if these people who are making insane amounts of money are.
Agreed. So, I was actually a question for you mm-hmm. that I'm curious you can answer too, Andre, is do you feel like you'd become unrelatable?
I worry about that all the time.
I knew it because I was thinking going to Florida. I was yeah. like, you know what I thought of? Mm. I was like, we right. got to get a private jet going to Tampa. I was close to texting you like, so are you considering a private
oh,
jet?
Oh, no. Gosh, no. No,
but
no,
see,
no,
to
no,
me,
no.
this is actually one of the questions I
want to ask
you guys.
Flew coach there and back.
Oh, man, that's so yeah. funny. I thought of, at what point do you buy the private jet? But then I started thinking, because we hung out with Meet Kevin, and he was talking about buying a private jet. Yeah. And I understand it always doesn't economically make sense. But.
Kevin's yeah. like, well, I bought a private jet. Graham's like, well, I flew coach. And I'm like, well, I walked.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I worry about that all the time. I mean, it's something that I've realized I've just come to terms with, that like I can't stay at the same point in my life forever. And right. I won't always be the person who's living in the one side of the duplex for $0 a month because the tenant pays the other half. So I have to evolve and grow as a person. And that just comes with being myself. I do worry about that, though. So especially with this house, like I really had to explain, like, guys, for resale, it makes sense. You got to get the square footage. And I save more money than I spend by living in this house in Vegas than California. So yeah. I try to rationalize every purchase, like the Tesla. I'm like, I sold stock at $6,000 for the Tesla. And now that car, I think, is going to do better than the stock. And I'm already up 30% on the stock from where I sold. That, you know, I'm up 30% on the car from where I sold the stock.
One thing I noticed about you guys that you do really well is you are a micro investor, and in that you're very interested in looking at numbers. And if you go, you know what, I believe that the next 6 months there's 9% return in the stock market and 12% in crypto, you guys aren't married to stock market. You go, I'm going right. to crypto and 18% real estate, I'm going to do real estate now. Right. That's really interesting because my philosophy is far different. And one thing I'm interested with you is how much mental energy you spend analyzing money. And to me, what I found much more enjoyable about my income going up, for reference, I used to make $45,000 a year at my job. Now I'm probably, I don't know, let's call it $500 this year, somewhere in that ballpark, is being able to go and have pizza with friends, and you just buy whatever pizza you want. It sounds funny, but once you make that jump and you just don't even worry about the, you don't even look at the menu. I used to be the ultra frugal guy where you're analyzing, you know, you go into Walmart and you're like, this rice is 13 cents per ounce and that one's 15 cents. I mean,
for me, it's appetizers. Okay. I'm like ordering appetizers. I'm like, man, I've changed.
But there's a freedom that comes with it. And I'm wondering, I would never tell someone how to live their life. And I'd be curious, if I was in your shoes, I would live life much differently, and to the point where I probably would be reckless in some regard, where if I want a Lambo, I'm just going to go buy it. That's just the way I believe I will be once I get to that income level.
Yeah,
maybe.
You guys are still like so good at like sticking to the micro.
Like for me, the way that I avoid that is because I've had so many little moments in my life where I've attained that thing I've put on a pedestal. And then once you recognize that feeling of satisfaction, that it goes away in whatever, a couple months, you're like, okay, cool, what's the next thing? And then you get the next thing.
Have you ever heard the term hedonic adaptation?
Yes, yeah, okay. the hedonic treadmill, all that stuff. Yeah, it's like you can never adapt, and you grow a new baseline of happiness, and like that's what it takes. And then the next thing is like, okay, now it's a $10 million house and a Bugatti now. And it's like, I don't want to be on
human.
That. Yeah.
If you could strategically set up your life, I think the best way would be to somehow elevator it every single year.
But that's what I do. So I only live really for the most part on whatever the investments generate. But since I'm constantly investing, it's like, well, that, you know, if I take 3% every year, it's going to be worth more because I'm investing more. So like, even though it's small, it's every year has been better than the prior because I just limit it to, it's always under 3%. But
I will agree with Graham though, where it's like the epitome of the saying, what got you here won't get you there. You know, there's only so many ramen noodles you could consume just to save cash. Like, you have to go beyond that, whether it's expanding into different asset classes with, you know, luxury cars like Graham was doing. And that's what I'm trying to do too with Lucky, where it's like I'm buying a car that's going to fix it up and flip it. Like, I would never consider doing that when I was making 50K a year. But if I want to get to that next stage, then I have to learn new things, take new risks. And
no, I think for a lot of people too, it's important that they diversify and they invest with a brokerage that saves them a lot of money. Up to 85% lower than the top competitors.
Wait, you own your own brokerage.
All thanks to our sponsor, FTX US. They're trusted by millions of users to buy, sell, track, and trade both crypto and NFT all in one place with extremely low fees. They got no ACH fees and no gas fees in the top Ethereum and Solana collections.
And no withdrawal fees on NFTs.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
I even heard that they work with people like Steph Curry, the Miami Heat Arena, Jeremy LaFave.
That's Tom Brady.
That's the real GOAT, Jeremy LaFave right there. That's the GOAT of all time. Yeah, and they give you free Dogecoin.
That's right, and it's so easy. All you got to do is literally you just select what you want, type in how much you want to buy, type in how often you want to buy it, and then swipe right and you're done. I actually really like that they do automatic recurring buys, because then you could dollar cost average into the market without even thinking about it.
And a really good question I had recently was, well, Andre, if I dollar cost average with smaller amounts, aren't I going to pay more in fees? And that's not true.
No. Well, at least not with FTX, because they have no fixed minimum fees on transactions. So if you guys are interested, you want to support the channel, the link is down below in the description with the code MMFTX. Down below in the description, and you can get free crypto all the way up to $100, depending on how much you trade. So
check them out.
Yeah. But that is very important, Andre, that people do that if they want to diversify.
Dollar cost average, diversify. Yeah. Are you investing in crypto, by the way?
Not really.
What?
Why? Hella broke. Because of my lawsuit.
Oh.
I have no money.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, of course. Really?
So wait, what happened exactly?
I made a video about someone, and that someone sued me.
Wow, for what exactly? Defamation. Okay, yeah. So we just saw one of the biggest trials of defamation. And I understand, those are extremely difficult to win.
The big key indicator is public figure versus private figure.
Interesting.
Public figure is, there's a lot more leeway. That's part of what we take on as a public figure. People might make videos about us.
Interesting. So as a public figure, you are less protected, you're saying?
Absolutely.
Right.
That's why presidents, CEOs, you can be kind of ugly towards them, and it's really challenging to...
And this person who's suing you, are they private or public?
They're definitely public figure. Blue check mark, 4 million on Instagram.
Okay. So there's not that many grounds to really succeed on that.
It's going to be very challenging, especially because I interviewed someone for the video. I did not make any claims.
Right. Here's the thing, though, is that this guy wants to make a point to Spencer and say, Spencer, you better take that video down. Did they ask you to take the video down? You said no. I'm guessing
it. He was taken down immediately. Within 16 minutes of receiving the cease and desist.
Wow. So even after that, they want to prove a point, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And lawsuits could be expensive. I mean, unfortunately,
$125,000 out of pocket right now.
That's insane.
I've spent about 75 or 80. I've spent more on my lawsuit this year than I've made from YouTube.
No.
Which is really unfortunate.
Oh my gosh. But I would worry, at what point does that end? And if it's someone with deep pockets, I'm always concerned about that, because they could just, you know,
keep draining you with money. But at the end, if you win, you get the money back, right?
You counter sue.
You counter.
No, but you counter sue. So how does that work? Let's just say you counter sue somebody. I don't think it's an automatic judgment like that day. You could be like, hey, nope. Don't you start the process over again?
Uno reverse card.
I've never been in it. I am told that you hire your lawyer to sue them.
Okay.
And as part of that lawsuit, you would get those additional legal fees in return.
How crazy is that? Let's say you spent $200,000. You win. And it's like, well, if you want to get that $200,000 back, we got to do it all over again. There's another $200,000.
That doesn't make any sense. If you win, why do you have to win again?
Frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, and I've never, knock on wood, never been in a lawsuit before. I think it should be where if you lose, you are responsible for the other person's legal fees. Yep. And I think that might cut down on some of the fraudulent cases where people are bullied or people are incentivized by money just to be like, well, I have deeper pockets than you. So, here you go. To me, it's nothing. To you, it's going to screw you.
No, that's a good point. And Spencer, are you familiar with slap suits? Mm-hmm. Would this be considered one of those?
Possibly. Oh. I will not speak about details, but
you just explain to the audience what a slap suit is?
Basically, it's just trying to silence public criticism.
Okay.
And so, unfortunately, the legal system is very much built for the wealthy and corporations. Therefore, if you have $20 million and you wanted to sue a small YouTuber who might have made good claims about you, maybe brought up something about your past, then they can sue you. And unfortunately, when you're a smaller YouTuber, you might not make enough to be able to properly defend yourself. Mm. And that's where the slap lawsuits are actually very strategic. Yikes.
All right. Well, sorry to hear you going through that.
Yeah, it is what it is. Just another, I call it three steps back, 10 steps forward.
Yeah.
In life, I've had a lot of step backs, and I seem to go 10 steps forward following it. So I'm excited for the end of this year.
Now, I'm curious, going back to your family, your parents, are you, I don't know if it's too personal, are you set to inherit money? Or is this something where you know at like at some point you have you're going to have a whole bunch coming in?
My parents aren't like uber wealthy, by the way. It's not like to that level. I mean, yes, there will be money coming in between myself and brother and sister.
Okay, when we're talking about 1%, you said in their region?
Yeah, in their area. Yeah.
So it could be like someone living in Beverly Hills, but they're south of Olympic Boulevard, which is bad.
But do you know what the 1% is, though? Do you know what quantifies the 1%?
Well, hold on. 500 grand a year, right? 400K a year?
Are we taking net worth or?
Net worth, yeah.
Oh, net worth, I'm not sure.
I'm guessing probably got to be 2.5
2 million. Yeah, I was going to say
around
two.
Twos.
Sure. Well, let's use that metric then. Yeah, like, I mean, the whole neighborhood has got that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, income-wise, I know the government considers the 1% 400K a year.
It's just tricky because this idea of like the 1% is like the Elon Musk. Yeah, no, and it's totally not. Actually,
that's
accurate.
Point
however,
one
if you're going to make 450,000 next year, you're technically in the 1%, especially by age.
Yeah.
If we're making 400,000, we're doing quite well.
I thought this is interesting. I did a video. It's actually coming out soon that in terms of becoming the 1% or being in the 1%, statistically, you have an 11% chance of making it to the top 1% for at least 1 year in your lifetime. Now, here's what's crazy.
Wait, say that slower.
Yeah. To be in the top 1%, there is an 11% chance that you in your lifetime will be in the top 1%.
How is that calculated?
At least once.
At least once. So for 1 year, you can be in the top 1%. They probably look at people's...
Meaning a big
ledger.
Year. Let's say certain sales jobs. Okay. You can be in the 1% for 1 year. Or a big investment, Dogecoin. Yeah. Your buddy Dogecoin, if you would have sold, that's
by
1 year.
By that logic, you're always in that 11% chance. Because at any moment, you could go to the casino and bet on whatever.
Correct.
And win the jackpot.
Yeah, and that's why it's an 11% chance. But the thing is, to stay in that 1% for 5 years, you have a 1 in 45 chance.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
And then to be in there for more than 10 years, it's 1 in 100.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a lot of people
squander
hit
under it.
They squander it, or it's a one-off sale, a one-off event. The Dogecoin could be a good example, or you sell a business and all of a sudden you receive a $1 million windfall and that's not sustainable. Or it's just you have peak earning years. Maybe you're an athlete.
You just talked to Pro recently.
I did.
So his portfolio is down to like 300.
He says net worth is $500,000, but that includes his Dogecoin portfolio, I believe, is around 300 something. And then other investments, other cryptos, just cash.
Man, I wish we had a time machine. It's just...
Quick question to you guys. At what point do you have, like, what cash number do you sit on where you go, I'm comfortable taking risk that I normally wouldn't? Maybe you have $100,000 in cash, you go, I'm going to stim in $20,000 of that and go buy a car or
something. I would say that depends on the I guess, relative to what I'm trying to risk it for. Like right now with the cars, it's like I don't know. I'm not going to say how much it is.
Sure. Yeah, you're flipping cars, Sandra.
Flipping cars. Right now I have about $500,000 in the bank, which is all right, but I was more comfortable with about $1 million.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We're speaking about the levels. I mean, 500,000. I haven't had more than 10,000 in my bank account because I spend it immediately.
Yeah.
I love spending money. That's my next video.
Your lawyer loves you, man.
125,000. No, right,
that
now.
Ad revenue came in. All right, send it on over.
Dude, I just got another bill this morning for $4,000 from this expert I had to hire, and they went to deposition. I'm like, man, when does this stuff end?
Wow.
If I was really smart, though, I would probably have 10K in the bank at any given time. Just because I always wanted to have 99% invested. My only worry is that there could be an opportunity cost, or it could be either some ridiculous tax bill randomly that could happen, or God knows what, some expense. Yeah.
Keep in mind, year over year, you made more money in your cash than you did in stocks.
Yeah, that's
true. Year over year, stock market's down and crypto's down about 40-50%.
That's true.
So not always. So cash isn't always bad. I think it's sometimes worth it to keep a portion of your portfolio in cash just for opportunity.
I think I have an interesting conversation topic. You guys are big in the stock market, dollar cost averaging, all this stuff. I actually don't think it's a savvy strategy for most beginners to invest in the stock market or 401ks. You guys generally believe in 401ks?
No.
I'm under the impression that yes.
I don't.
You don't? Okay. My theory is that I think everyone should focus on working to get their income the highest humanly possible.
No, this is true. If we're talking about a chain of command type of should do first, this 100%.
Because I'm sure that you guys get plenty of DMs about, hey, I got 10K and I want to start investing. And I know you guys are busy enough where you can't answer them all. So I was going to give you a chance to possibly...
I always try to have that distinction where I give any kind of advice, you have to understand that person's situation. So
100%,
I would
agree. That's why you
can't even... 100%, you have to focus on first.
It's funny. I actually, the exact opposite. So I think you should... cut back first. And then you, then once you cut back everything that you can, that's the point to start making more.
Build the habits of frugality. Right. Because
otherwise you could always make more money. You could always spend it. So right. I'm like, cut back expenses first, then make more money. As far as the 401k, it's not like I have anything against it. Personally, I'm not a huge fan because I think a Roth IRA is better. I think there's so many other options, like maybe buying a house to house hack is a better option than that. But also, I'm just a firm, I think tax rates are only going up. So if you're deferring taxes now to maybe pay a higher tax rate in the future, like I can't fathom that we would be in a lower tax bracket 30 years from now than we are today.
But also, Graham, with the 401k, people could do the matching. So at least get the matching bonus.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Always right? Get the 100%. Always get the 401k.
Do the matching bonus, then do the Roth IRA.
That's right.
See, that's funny because I'm like the opposite. I don't even think you should look at 401ks. I'm so house hack driven. Mm. I think it's the best. Now, obviously, some people don't. The situation doesn't apply. But yeah. For me, the reason why house hacking, the reason why I preach it so much is because you take someone, I was earning $40,000, $45,000 a year. All of a sudden, you're spending $1,000 a month on total living costs, right? If you can get into a situation 5% down, 3.5% down on real estate, and you can get to a point where you're break even, yes, there's headaches, there's management. Look, I can share 2 hours worth of headaches with house hacking. However, when you get to the point of diminishing that $1,000 a month to zero, now all of a sudden that person has the opportunity to possibly buy a YouTube course, possibly buy something on real estate investing. Start True. The investing
path. It's so hard to generalize because, like, for example, I was in that position where I could have bought real estate a long time ago and I didn't because I wanted the freedom to move about if I needed to. And I think owning real estate, specifically when you're starting, when you need to be there, when you need to keep your costs low, there's an opportunity cost to being stuck in that position, geographically speaking.
Agreed.
Where if you get a job offer somewhere else, you know, in another state where it's maybe six figures, it's a lot harder to now run that house.
Great point. So, I've moved like 10 times since high school, so yeah, I understand that.
It's so hard to give people like generalized advice because some people are going to be entrepreneurs. Some people are going to be employees. It's like,
yeah, the thing is too, the average person only stays in their home for 7 years.
Yeah.
And that means 50% of people only live there for a few years.
Right.
So chances are buying isn't right for everybody.
Right.
Agreed.
It's a good point.
When I was 18, I had $12,000 and I spent it all and I maxed out my credit cards and I started my wedding business. Now, I don't recommend for anybody to max out their credit cards, but let's just say those credit cards weren't there. I could have taken those $12,000 and put it into the market, but I argue that I got a better return starting my own business. Now, again, that's not for everybody, but that's what I chose to do when I was 18.
Love it. I think that's the best path too. Better than house hacking is if you're the type of person that can go out and generate income. So whatever you can invest in that generates income, that's my strategy. I don't apply the same strategy that you guys do. I want to invest in people.
Yeah.
And so Lucky, he does all the work, flips cars. I don't have to do anything. No time or energy. I have 3 coming on 4 e-commerce stores, all done by the operators. No time or energy. I just converted a house to Airbnb.
Yeah.
Management. No management for me.
But here's what's interesting. This is the whole problem. It's like, all of that is amazing, but so much of those opportunities came because you're a social media person and you have the influence, you have the reach. It's like not everyone might have that.
Yeah, agreed.
So it's like, as much as I would love to make videos about like how I flipped this car, it's like, well, great, Andre, I don't have access to people like Lucky.
Can
I
you
might not
talk about the car that you're about to buy. Are you thinking about buying?
Yeah, well, I did. Yeah. I did. Yeah, I bought the Aston Martin.
But you're going
to
sell
that,
right?
Just to sell. I'm not going to keep it. Deal. Yeah. Not going to keep it, just to flip it really quick. And I don't know how much it's going to make, honestly. But I'd love to make a video about it. I just don't think it's going to be relatable or it's like, okay, cool, you did that. I can't do that.
The real best answer is a flow chart, right?
Yeah,
that's what we're essentially
chart,
getting
exactly.
at. Is a,
exactly.
It's a bunch of if-else statements. I used to work in software engineering, so it's like a bunch of, it's
right.
a binary tree, basically.
It is,
like,
yeah.
If this, then go here.
If this and that, yeah. Jeremy would be really proud for us of bringing Warren Buffett up, but you know, Warren Buffett's advice as far as what you should do is just invest in yourself, essentially.
100% agree. 100%
makes sense.
I'm starting to get those questions, which is odd, because it's like, that's not my path, and nor do I even think I'm a good investor. And so when people are like, hey, what should I do investing? I'm like, I'm not really the guy.
Yeah.
But I almost want to put out a video just to like, just point people
yeah.
to that video.
Well, that's how I consider myself. It's like, I'm not an expert on anything, but I feel like I have enough knowledge in a few fields where I could at least be a compass for people. And that's as good as, I'm fine with that. There's plenty of people that are smarter in stocks and more sophisticated with whatever, day trading or real estate. And I'm happy to be the guy that kind of breaks it down in a simple way that opens people up to the right question. And that's why I love YouTube, is like before YouTube, if you guys remember, there was the blogs, right? It was like all the bloggers doing that stuff with, what are some of the names?
Casey.
Casey? Who?
Bloggers?
Who were some of the bloggers?
I'm thinking vlog.
No, bloggers. Like, this is before videos.
Oh, gosh. I'm thinking vlog. That's, yeah. The only Perez Hilton
like
was the only
Money
like,
Mustache.
Oh,
those
guys. Yeah.
Yeah, Tucker Max was a big one for me in college.
You know,
Penny,
guys like
something
that.
What's the
investor guy?
Yeah, what's the Penny guy? What?
A Penny guy.
Penny hoarder,
whatever, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there we go. So people like that was like, I feel like when we learned, and I think we used a lot of the same resources at the time, you needed to have the right question first. Like, you needed to have that awakening where it's like, oh man, I should really learn about money. And then you ask the right question. The reason that YouTube is so wonderful is because you could be browsing the web at like 3 a.m. watching random cat videos. And then you run across a Graham Stephan video and you're like, oh, that's amazing. I didn't know I needed to know this, right? And I love that because it forces you to ask the question. Whereas the other mediums are about knowing the question beforehand. And I think that's half the struggle. Some people don't even understand to ask that question until they're 30, 40, mm-hmm. when they've been in bankruptcy or they've lost their job. And that's the opposite of what we want. That's
a great point. Yeah. I like it. All right. Another question I have for you guys. What is the value of having money when you are no longer wake up the next day?
Ooh.
When you what? No longer wake up?
You know, come on. You're the guy that talks about the YouTube.
Are you when you unalive? When you no longer wake up? I'm like, why wouldn't I?
Like, would
I oversleep? Would I oversleep? Did the alarm not go off? Why didn't I wake up?
Yeah.
This
is like a philosophical question, which I enjoy.
Gosh, I hate thinking about that. I don't know. People are taken care of. You don't have to worry. I wouldn't worry anyway.
Well, the reason why is I think it's Alex Hormozi is the best at this, where he starts asking questions and it really makes you rethink certain belief systems that you have.
Yeah.
And one thing that's happened to me recently is as my income goes up and my confidence in obtaining that income year after year has gone up, I believe I'll be a high earner. And so it's really started to make me think, like, what's the value of money? What is the value of today versus the future? Which is the question we always struggle with, right? Is, are you building up your 401k or whatever for a bright future, or do you want to spend that today? It's such a tough question. I think it's one of life's toughest questions. And so do you spend the money today knowing that what does it really matter when you pass?
Yeah,
so,
but you're probably going to live a lot longer.
Statistically,
so like,
you will live longer.
Sure, but we all have a skill set that's going to make good money. And so we have an investment strategy such that we have money coming in.
Yeah, so many people use that kind of philosophy to a detriment, where it's like, I'm sure we've all heard it before. It's like, well, I could die tomorrow.
Hit by a bus. Yeah. That's the most common. How many people get hit by a
by
bus?
By the way,
really?
Let me be clear. I'm not talking about spending 20 grand a month recklessly. Right. I'm saying the little expenses here and there. Like, oh, you want a sports
car?
You
only live once.
Yeah, you want a sports car and your car payment went from $500 a month to $2,500 a month.
Here's how I've tried to rectify that problem in my own head, as far as like, you only live once, Andre. You should get yourself that Lamborghini and enjoy it. Where it's like, I think if you can practice gratitude, retrospectively, as you look back at everything you've accomplished, and as long as you're happy with less, I think you can deal with that, like, oh, I should buy more stuff because it'll make me happier. So I try not to think of it in those terms, and I try to be happy in the moment constantly, rather than looking forward to a brighter future where I'm wealthier. Because I think at the end of the day, that will not have that same happiness level that I imagine myself to have in the future.
Did that change once you reached a threshold where you're like, I'm good. Okay.
It's changed it as I've become wealthier. I notice myself that I'm not happier than I was before.
Sure.
I'm less anxious. Sure. Right. I don't have to budget as much. All those things are great. But the way that I think about having money is like the same as having your health, or the same as breathing. You never wake up in the morning and you're like, I'm so grateful to be breathing and like be healthy. But it's one of those things when you're sick, like, oh man, I wish I was more grateful when I wasn't.
How much money do you want, doctor, if you can get me back to feeling good? Yeah.
I thought about this to myself. I remember having
COVID.
I remember having COVID and I was like, I will give up 99% of all my money right now to never feel like this again. It's like the simplest thing.
Right.
So if you can be happy with less.
Oh, this is actually an interesting segue. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was curious what you guys thought about, we talk about investing, right? And generally it's like investing to make money, investing in mental health and physical well-being.
Yeah.
So I'll start. I notice I get Athletic Greens, which is $80
They're
a month
great.
Or something. Yeah, so it's like
great.
You start investing in better food,
yep.
better nutritious or higher nutritious value food that you put in your body. I've been going to boxing twice a week
cool.
now, which is like great exercise. But also little things like I've been going to get massages, which I told you need to do, mm-hmm. three a month. These are little things that I wasn't doing before. Now that I'm making a little more, I view that as an investment in yourself, and I'm curious if I'm going to leave it open for you guys.
I kept up the boxing training. I've really enjoyed it. Never had a personal trainer before that, and I love it.
Good.
It's such good exercise, and I got on a really healthy diet when I was doing all that, and I've just kept it.
That's good.
It's so hard to get back on it, so I've just, you know, if I continue at like 90% the same thing, I'll just keep doing it.
I asked myself that exact question. Like, Andre, if you were to stop YouTube, what would you focus on? It would be my personal health.
Would you just get jacked?
Do you feel it? Where would you put it?
That's what I would do. On a scale of 1 to 10.
I've been jacked, like not like crazy, but like I hate the way I feel sluggish. I don't know. What does he look like?
He's huge.
Muscular.
You see like his he is the biggest calves I've ever seen.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you place yourself right now in physical health?
Like 75% of the way there. It's not bad. I'm not totally out of shape, but still. I don't want to be jacked. I love feeling light. Like the big guys, it's just like, you're so sluggish.
No, I love
the
feeling of the pump afterwards. Really? Like you just feel.
Pump.
Yeah. You get the pump. You like, if you work at the gym, you know
what I'm talking about, right?
What?
Arnold.
I don't
know. Bump,
it's
bump.
One of the best clips in the movie history. Yeah. Arnold's movie. Oh, yeah. And then also investing in books is something that in my background, I have books. I kind of like to represent that.
I cannot read books, man.
No way.
I'm the worst. No. I don't know what it is. Maybe I have a short attention span, like a squirrel. I can't read books.
And I'm sure you've asked yourself this, but was it the topic or the book that was not right, or you just couldn't find?
No,
anything?
I mean, like, I
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop. And even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand. And even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
It's probably a hybrid of both, because I've read all the Harry Potter series. Like, I've been glued to it. But
that's fascinating.
I guess I consume my information differently.
Yeah, you're very cerebral. I would see you as a book nerd.
No, fascinating. I'm the worst. No.
Because something I'm enjoying recently, now that I've dropped from 3 videos a week to 2, which really upset this guy.
You know what? And it is because
you should have seen his face when I was like, Graham, the next couple months I'm releasing 1 video a week. And he goes, no.
Because you know what? Ad rates are going down. Going down, Spencer. So now's your time before they drop any lower for you to get out 3 videos a week.
Yeah, you've got one more year. He's like, give me a timeline.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, now that I have a little more time, I've been trying to figure out, like, what's the balance in life? What do I really want?
Yeah.
And one thing, I really enjoy reading in various topics. I really enjoy reading Dan Bilzerian's book, of all things.
Yeah.
Does that bring anything to my life? I don't know.
Right.
But once you start, I don't know, for me personally, once I start introducing books back into my life, it opens up my mind to different possibilities and different worlds.
What do you like about Dan's book?
It was really entertaining. One thing I really appreciate about Dan Bilzerian is how open he is about the psychology of fame and a certain level of success with women that no guy. It's just a for
give
a
us
moment
like a cliff notes. Give us like a cliff notes of what we can absorb from it that you felt like you got value out of.
The story where a girl joins his van with the boy. I don't know if you want to get into this.
Well, it's
a
PG
debauchery.
Give it the PG version.
Yeah, like, what's the lesson learned?
Yeah.
Here?
Well, tell us now. I'm curious what happened.
It's more entertainment. It's like it's like watching a Happy Madison movie. You're not going to learn anything.
I don't care. I'm curious now what happens. I'm invested in the story.
One
this
thing
is
I'm fascinated with Dan is his understanding of hedonic adaptation. He's the first celebrity I've ever seen that understood it. And that's one thing I appreciate about him.
Who's talked about what happened in the van? Yeah.
But him, oh, the van was a story where he was PG in like Italy. Sure, okay. Italy, and he's going with a crew. And wherever he goes, it's a spectacle. He's got eight, the most beautiful women you've ever seen, and a couple security guards. And all of a sudden, a girl joins the crew. He could spot her looking and is like, oh, I want to join this crew. So the girl joins the crew. They get in the van. And a guy comes up and is like, you know, he thinks he wants a picture. He's like, no. And I get trying to figure out what's he saying. There's commotion. He's like, that's my girlfriend. And Dan looks at the girl and her friend like, that's your boyfriend. Do you want to leave? And they just gave an indication that they didn't want to leave. And so the van got shut. Van door got shut. And the van took off to a private yacht where they engaged in adult activities.
Okay.
And the guy ends up coming to the yacht. He like chases them down. They're freaking out. And the bodyguard's like, what's going on? Like, this, yeah. We got to handle this. And he goes, the poor kid, the girlfriend had the keys to the house. The poor kid couldn't get home.
Oh.
And that's part of that book was just like, Dan was just like, this is absurd. You know, he felt bad.
Wow. Yikes.
So I thought that was a really interesting story. And now the people watching are like, oh my God, what does Spencer like to read? I just find that stuff interesting. It was entertaining. And it was interesting. The reason why is because I enjoy seeing different perspectives in life. And this is a perspective I've never understood. And I'm fascinated with fame and how it affects people and the people around them. And so I really enjoy someone who can speak from that side. So candidly, very few people do.
No, I agree.
Because they have an image to uphold, but he doesn't.
No, I agree. I think it's fascinating as well. Speaking of the health stuff, how you said investing in health, I read somewhere that there is actually a centenarian gene where people that live to 100, where it's more about your genetics. It's very little to do with exactly how your health habits are.
Go to the gym. You can see it firsthand. When some guys are like, I work out much better than him. Yeah. There was a quick story in college. I had a friend of mine, 6'2", 205, football player, athletic as can be, right? And me and my buddy are trying to bodybuild and we're analyzing the macros and macronutrients and we're counting our calories and going to the gym and the most perfect regimen known to man. And we're trying to get bigger. And this guy has the most perfect physically shaped body, you know, muscular definition's perfect. Yeah. And we're like, dude, what do you do? Like, how do you get so in shape? You're way better looking than us. And he's like, oh, wait, really? You like count your what's macros and what's protein? He goes to McDonald's. And you're like, wow, that's the difference.
Yeah, he could like lift up a cup of coffee. You're like, you just grew an extra bicep from that, dude. I've seen it firsthand for sure.
Yeah. You saw this in sports too. So I played college baseball.
Oh, you did?
And I played plenty of guys who reached the big leagues, reached pros, got drafted, all those played with and against. And a lot of those guys don't necessarily work harder. They just are bigger, faster, stronger, and better. Yeah. There's also another really quick side point. There's probably a certain subset of the population that makes professional. You guys talked to Austin Eckler.
Yeah.
There's something all these guys have that is top 1%, hand-eye coordination, the way your body reacts to stimulus and training that we all have. But tying it back to investing, I feel like we all have an advantage. And this is something I was actually going to bring up, is the idea of having an edge in investing. So in sports betting, the winners have what is called an edge, 1-3% against the books. And when you have an edge, it just becomes a volume game. The more volume you get down, the more you make, obviously, because you have an edge. And so I've thought of like the best investing strategy is probably where you have an edge. And so I was curious if you guys had ever considered, do you guys feel like you have an edge in any area?
I think
that's
what index funds are supposed to be.
Okay.
Just that
small edge. Are we talking about for investing or making money?
Just making money, investing, just kind of broad level conversation.
I think my edge is focus.
Your edge is YouTube 100%. Your ability to, what your superpower is with YouTube is your ability to be consistent. 3 videos a week for
That's what I think the focus is. I thought everyone just focus, just do it. But I could tune everything out. As long as I'm just no distractions, I could just lock myself in a room, just get something done.
I think that's something for those of you who might DM one of us. It's like, how do I get started with investing? I have $1,000. The real question is, where's your edge? There's some people who know the car business way better. You'll make more than all of us in the car business because you know something that we don't, or maybe you have the ability to analyze the stock market or whatever it is, flip houses. Everyone's got something. And whatever that is for someone, if they have an edge in that marketplace, they're going to make as much money as they want to make.
What would you say your strength is?
My strength is resiliency.
Resiliency.
Yeah.
So just constantly just going at it no matter what.
I'm always forward thinking. That's why, like with the lawsuit, it's like, I'm broke, whatever.
Right.
I'll bounce back. Once it's over, I'm going to make more money.
That's fair.
Actually, back to the being around wealth. One thing that I've noticed around being around wealthy people is that at some point, I think we all reach a point where we make enough where we can't spend it. And one thing I've noticed is these people, because they don't spend their money, why would you spend 30, 40 years of your life toiling away in hard work to make a bunch of money that you never spend? And so one thing that I have admirable confidence in is my ability to, at some point, whether that's next year, 5 years, 10 years, I'll make enough where I can't spend it.
Mm-hmm.
And so For me, I don't really care what my bank account says today, because at some point I'm going to be uber wealthy. I just have abnormal level of confidence. Whether it's rational or irrational, I don't care.
Not worry, so, that would stress me out. I think the opposite. I think every day I'm going to be broke. I'm just like, yeah, tomorrow
you're like the epitome
happen.
Of never underestimate the guy who overestimates himself.
There's a term called irrational confidence, and a lot of guys in the NBA have this, where you're like, why are you taking that shot? Yeah. And they hit it, and that's what gets them to the NBA.
Mm. I could really relate with the concept of enough. I think there was like an anecdote, I forget exactly how it goes, but it's like, you know, a husband and a man, a husband and his wife are walking on a beach, and they see a yacht way out in the distance in the ocean, and he says to his wife, hey, you see that guy, he's a billionaire, but I have something he will never have. She's like, what's that? Enough. And that's, I think that's an important trait to understand when your enough is enough.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well, I talk about it numerically, how you can find that enough number where it's
probably a lot less than you realize.
Yeah. It's
so that's where it is with me. I feel like
it's
I'm
how much
very
you spend.
Close.
It's how much you spend. Is
and
what
my
it
spend is.
Is
so low that, of course I have aspirations to have certain style house. I want to be able to throw, like, one thing I would love to do is be able to throw a monthly party where you cater. Bill's on me, guys, but you have like a bunch of people show up, and that's a way to network.
You know what's crazy? When I lived in my smaller house, it was like 1,700 square feet, I used to throw together like these little get-togethers with my friends, and they would all come over, and there's like 10, 15 people there, but it felt so cozy, and it felt like a grand old time, right? Now I have a 4,300 square foot house, like that giant one with the loft. I could invite 30 people, and I feel embarrassed. I'm like, this feels like it's not a party. It's like, I need more people to stuff this house with. It's interesting. So it's like the more stuff you bring in your life, the more you have to fill it with other stuff. It's never enough.
There's the interesting story about spending years and years and years toiling away, trying to make as much money as you can to afford the big house. Once you get the big house, you never develop friendships along the way because all you did was work. Right. So then you have no one to invite to your big house.
Right. No, but what if you make work friends? I don't know. To me, it's just like,
we're super lucky that we're in like a small community that is the creator community. And so there's a natural connection that we all share.
Yeah, but I feel like that's in every, like for me, real estate was the same thing. It's like you're in the real estate community and you talk with another agent. It's like you instantly hit it off because you relate to each other. I feel like that's in a lot of businesses.
Yeah, I'm jealous of Graham's fulfillment, where it's like, I think he gets fulfilled by working and earning. And I think that's really admirable, whereas like I don't find
Oh yeah, I know, I love work.
Yeah.
I love
it. You live to work. I want to work to live.
Yeah. I love feeling productive.
Yeah.
Like I took most of this weekend off. But there was one afternoon, it was just like, I felt so good getting stuff done. I cleaned all the windows outside.
Yeah, I'll
the
do
squeegee.
That stuff too, yeah.
I love that. I felt so good. If I don't do something, I just get sleepy and tired and sad.
No,
I was
same.
Like doing
I always
something.
Have to be productive for sure, too. But I have to like do different things. I can't just focus on one thing.
Yeah,
I can, though. I will have that same focus as you, where it's like everything melts away and no one exists.
Yeah. It's flow state.
I know
I love
exactly
it.
That. Yeah.
I have noticed a little bit of that in me. When my ad revenue went down from 25,000, 20,000 down to like 9,000, I was okay. But I did notice when I jumped back to two videos a week, there is an element of the accomplishment, the sense of accomplishment. Yeah.
Imagine
you see a number goes
three
up.
Now. I'm going to get you back to three.
I will say,
not a chance.
Three videos.
I'm trying to up my production. I also do want to pivot a little bit. Like the fake guru stuff is great. We've had talks off camera. Me and Andre have talked about this ad nauseum, but there is something too. Like when you're constantly looking at flaws and fraud and all your DMs are this guy's a fraud and this guy, it's like,
it
wears on you. And it really does mentally. I'm not that guy. I'm super optimistic. I'm a joyful person. And I think what I'm doing is good. I do think there is a benefit to calling out certain practices and there is an awareness. Please be aware of certain people that promote. Unfortunately, there are people out there who don't understand that 30% guarantee returns are not. You should probably be very careful with someone who promotes that. And so I believe I'm that voice to say, be careful. We've kind of chatted about how do you get to a goal? How do you go from A to B? Mm-hmm. Some people are, I'm going to teach you how to build the bridge from A to B. Some people say, I want to teach you how to stay away from this danger over here in order to get from A to B. I feel like I'm that guy. However, I want to start pivoting a little bit. I'm going to do a video. I'm actually going out to Phoenix tomorrow behind the scenes of my buddy's $150 million company. I would love to do those videos. Like, how did he actually build the company?
Mm-hmm.
And do kind of a mix between positive.
For sure. I agree. It's always better to show people a better path than it is to try to tear someone else's path down.
Yeah.
If it's a bad path, it'll tear itself down.
I don't necessarily completely agree with the idea that I'm like tearing paths down.
Yeah.
But I'm just for the more macro philosophically, I do think you have a good point. Yeah. And I completely agree.
Yeah.
It will eat you alive.
But I will say back to the wealth thing, it's, I don't know. I feel like the more stuff you have, the more it bears down on you, if that makes sense.
You watch Fight Club? One of the best movies?
Yeah.
What you own ends up owning you?
Yeah. I don't know, man.
That's why Andre bought an Audi R8.
I haven't bought it one.
You haven't bought it yet?
No, no, no.
Oh, you got to fill the garage, right? You get the big house and you got three garage spots. You got to get three
flip
cars.
It. Think it. It's a flip it. Okay. Yeah. Flip it.
I don't need to drive a crazy luxury car, thankfully. I only got the Tesla just for safety because it's like the safest car out there. Normally, I drove a Toyota Corolla, and that's my girlfriend Corey's. So I'm like, man, it would be a shame to get hit by a truck in a Corolla while I'm making all this YouTube money for however long.
Hey, you should try a Volvo. Those are pretty safe, too.
Yeah, you got the $1,000 Volvo, yeah. Which I heard you tried to sell to Pro for $6,000.
That's what it's worth.
What the heck?
It's worth $6,000. Oh, look at it.
Morby not teach you anything that you try to sell it for six on terms?
I tried to sell
to get me to pay for it on payments.
Oh,
I said, I was trying to get a car for my wife.
No shame.
And he was like, I know how much he paid for it because I'm the one who went and picked it up. And you know what? He's still trying to sell it to me for $6,000.
Because the car's okay. So Andre, so here's my example. You bought a Bored Ape NFT for $100.
I have.
But let's just say, okay, hypothetically,
sure.
Does that influence the price that you would sell it for today because you bought it at $100? Would you take $300
for it? Depends on who I'm selling to.
Okay. $600. You bought it for $100. Someone's like, I'm going to pay you $600. I know how much you paid for it. $100. I'm offering you six times
that's
that.
That's not a fair premise It's not a fair premise. You know why? Because you set up a Bored Ape expectation. We can't set that premise up.
Okay, but the market value of the car is around $6,000. Okay. That's the market. If I were to put it online, I'd get that.
Yes.
I don't want to sell it, but if I did, I would want market value.
Here's where I think people have a problem with it, is if you're selling it to like someone you work with or your close friends, then it's like, why would you do that?
I don't want to sell the car though. That's the thing.
Then
but I would
sell it on the market for $6,000, and then
I wouldn't
no
sell it. But I said, you know, if he wants to buy it, I'd rather it go to a friend at market value.
That doesn't make sense.
I don't
want to
sell. Okay, so I get more value than I would get from like $7,000 for the car.
Right.
So like, if someone offered me $8,000, I would be on the fence whether or not I actually want to sell it
for that car.
Yeah. Because I drive
it
a lot.
If someone offered you $8,000.
Because I drive it a lot.
You have a Tesla Model 3.
I drive that car more. I don't know why. I just do. Okay, because I don't have to worry about it. I fill up with gas.
We talk about investing in your safety.
That's a safe car.
That is not.
But anyway,
safe
but my
car.
Point.
The Volvo, that's like 20 years old.
It's not. It's 2006. Not even 20 years old.
It's like 16.
So what? It doesn't feel like
okay,
that.
Imagine yeah. this. I don't want this to happen. I'm just saying. Yeah. Hypothetically, you're driving around as a decamillionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get hit by a truck and then you, whatever, something happens. You're like, if I was only less frugal and I was driving in a safer car, I would have been better off. Doesn't that worry you?
There could always be a safer car.
Are you getting the Cybertruck, by the way?
I mean, I put down that everyone put down $100.
Maybe that's a fair.
But here's the thing. But
yeah,
I could always say, well, you know, imagine something happened to you in a Model 3. You could have gotten a Rolls Royce Cullinan. And that, then you would be above everyone else. And you're in that car. You could get one of those like Defender cars.
There's diminishing returns though. Because with that point, you could be like, you should just drive a semi.
Well, then you should probably hire a driver and be in the back seat of an SUV.
No, I think there's a point at which there's you get 90% of the way there. It's like you got the practicality.
I think Volvos are incredibly safe. People drive older cars in that all the time.
I hear a lot of justification for why he owns it. Yeah. I don't know if it's the safest.
Yeah. Volvo, I think it's. I think it's perfectly fine.
You need a Jeep 4x4, one of these monster ones with armored
6x6 Gladiator.
You know, bad A. You look YouTube algorithm. You know how bad boy you would look if you pulled up with armored vehicle and some big dudes jumping out like your security. Yeah. I think that's the next move for you.
Oh, gosh,
I'm curious. When do you get private chefs?
Ooh.
I would, yeah. I told Macy, I'd love
about
that.
Have you got? Yeah. You guys are friends with Dylan, so this is something we chatted about.
Yeah, Dylan had a private chef,
and he
didn't
like it. Oh, okay, he did not pay nearly as much as I thought he would. Like, you think a private chef,
grand,
you got to be rich?
Grand?
That's like three grand a month.
Only
$100. So for $100 a day, I would imagine that like you could basically go to Trader Joe's and buy all the pre-made meals for.
No, but
a
Dylan was telling me he's like, I could go to STK every day and probably still spend less. Which makes sense. Yeah. You could go out every day.
But it's the hassle of going out.
True.
Yeah.
Do you guys have more internal confidence looking at a bank account with more money than when you first started this journey?
More confidence?
Internal confidence.
Oh, internal confidence.
How you view yourself, your self-esteem, the way you carry yourself.
Yeah, but it's less to do with money and it's more to do with me figuring out my place in the world and kind of value I provide.
For me, it's security. Just knowing that like
it's not
you could mess up on a reasonable scale and still be totally fine.
Do you relate with this concept? When my world is falling apart, I'm the least stressed. When I'm doing incredibly well in my life, That's when I'm the most stressed.
Oh, fascinating.
You know why? Because when I'm making a ton of money, my thought is I could be doing more, or like I could lose this at any point. How do I capitalize on this right now while I still have the eyeballs to make it into something bigger?
Expectations.
Expectations. But when I'm not making as much, or I'm just not, I'm down on my luck or whatever it is, things are falling apart. I'm like, well, things can't get worse than, you know, I can only go up from here. So I'm most relaxed when I'm doing the worst. And I'm most stressed when I'm doing the best, because I always want to push myself beyond my limit, beyond my best. And I'm always faulting myself for how could I do it even better than
YouTube algorithm probably doesn't help when you're like, when it's the red arrow down, you release a good video, like the Logan Paul video, which was really good. Yeah. It's like 9 out of 10.
What happened to that? Did that ever pick up or no?
Oh, I haven't checked.
What if it's at 1 million views? How do you not check? I check all of my old videos.
Because data does not influence anything. It doesn't change how you make videos. You can't change it.
I feel like we all have like an internal meter for how data. Are we proud of this latest video?
Yeah. No,
I relate more to that.
Hasn't really grown. That's odd. I thought that would be a video that would long tail, and usually my videos long tail like
me
that.
Me too. That's fine. I loved making it and I loved hanging out. So
the reason
fine.
Why I ask about the internal confidence is I wonder about this idea once you're doing better, like you get the private chef. Does it make you into a, I don't really know where I'm going with this, but more of like more confident you, where you have a private chef, like you start to view yourself as more important, but I don't want to get it like you feel like you're more important than others.
What's crazy. I've actually held back on inflating my lifestyle from that vanity metric because I've been, when I was much younger, not quite on this level, but I remember when I had more and I perceived myself as that way, I became less of a good person.
Okay. I'm also thinking more along the lines of like, if you have aspirations of a certain net worth, or you want to be around certain people with certain net worth, do you start doing the things that they do to feel more
I think that's a them issue.
This is all like philosophical questions.
I think that's a them issue. If they need materialistic success or chefs to feel like they're validated, I think that's a them problem.
Interesting. Because I will say on a like step one of this is getting your own place. Yeah. Something I want to do by the end of this year because I still live with roommates.
Yeah.
Buying your own place and living in a nicer house certainly makes you feel better about yourself. I have more confidence in myself, and I believe that plays well to YouTube, because in the moment where a video comes out and it's the 10 out of 10, I'm good. I'm doing well. I'm confident in myself. I have reason to believe that I'm going to do really well in life. And I was just curious if you felt like these are factors that play into that kind of overall belief system in yourself.
I think there's a degree at which it loses meaning. Like 90% of the way there, like owning a house, owning a car, having a purpose. And then once you reach those basic milestones, the rest is just like kind of vain.
Salad dressing. Extra salad dressing.
Yeah. I wouldn't. Interesting. And also, I think at a point, so much of life has to do with experiencing it.
Like, agreed.
Even the simplest things.
Like flying private to Tampa. Come on, that's a once in a lifetime thing. I was just thinking because everyone was flying. We flew 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. That was miserable. I'm like, dude, I got to start making more money. I can't do this.
Really?
Oh, that was awful.
They had other flights, though. I mean, they had flights that left that morning, unfortunately.
They weren't direct flights. They were Delta, but they were 9 hours in between.
Oh, yeah. No, I had a layover.
Just take JetSuite. They're not.
They don't fly to Florida.
Unfortunately, JetSuite doesn't go all the way to Tampa.
Right.
But JetSuite's a game changer. I hope you start taking.
You know what? I actually booked a flight JetSuite.
Yeah.
Booked it. It's this upcoming Monday. I'm going down to LA for a few days. Never done it before.
Oh, it's going to change your life.
No, so
you've done it.
You know what's crazy?
It's great.
So I looked at normal plane tickets. Now, when I wanted to leave, the plane tickets were about $120 or about $100 one way from Vegas to LA. The JetSuite X was $219.
Yeah, it's almost
the same. This is what I'm talking about. Like, I feel like at some point you just don't look at the price. Like, to me, your time is worth so much more. I don't know what to place your time at. But to me, like the idea of anything under $5,000, I don't even think you should consider.
The thing is, sometimes I look at like how much I could reasonably do in a day, and my time is less valuable at 12 midnight because I'm not doing anything anyway than it is at like 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's sometimes when I'm energy. Like, when I'm done, I agree with that.
Being able to pull up to JetSuite and you got your little valet and you can walk right up and the cute girl's like, okay, it's 5 minutes till takeoff, and you just sit down and 5 minutes later you're right on the tarmac. Yeah. There's a lot of value.
I'll try it out.
What if it's
never
not a cute
it.
Girl? What if it's like a big sweaty dude?
I'm just trying to make the story sound more alluring.
Someone for everyone, Andre. Okay. Maybe
Spencer's like, I'm out of here.
I want Graham to walk up thinking he's going to walk in on a red carpet and be given some chocolate.
Yeah.
Hey, like 5 minutes away.
Well, that's something I've noticed in myself is how do I value time and energy? And you guys are.
I think that's a very slippery slope.
Oh, yeah. Now I went down the rabbit hole. Very
slightly disagree. I think it's really important to evaluate, to at least have some moments where
again,
you think about
in moderation. I think there comes a point at which if you view your life through that lens of everything is a financial game, like I've been there when I'm hanging out with my friends and I'm like, how much is this costing me?
Yeah, I've done that too.
I could have made $5,000 right now. And I'm like, oh, wait, let me snap out of this. This is not cool. I'm spending time with my friends, with my family. I should not be thinking this.
My point is that you shouldn't think about money in the moment. Exactly what you're explaining.
Right. Yes.
We agree. We actually agree, even though, right. Yeah.
But I'm saying it's a slippery slope. Because
maybe so.
What will lead you to get to that point is you don't suddenly stop thinking that way.
Got it. A lot of these questions understand that you guys are where I want to be in 2 to 3 years. So a lot of these are asking, so I'm actually very curious.
Yeah, I've still not snapped out of that, by the way. Yeah. That I know like every hour is worth X amount. And if that activity, I always think to myself, is that activity worth that amount of money? Like, would I pay that amount of money for doing that? And it really was bad.
Yeah.
Well, I thought everything
about going to Tampa with that flight schedule, it messed up our entire next day because we have to get in and then we nap. And then before you know it, it's 2 and we're all hungry. And then we get the crew together and we go eat. It's 5 o'clock. Oh my gosh, where did the day go? Yeah. Well, part of that was the flight. And if we had the ability to possibly use our time really efficiently in whatever manner you determine,
yeah,
that's where you start evaluating the cost.
There are certain things that I agree with that helped. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this before. I got a first class plane ticket to Florida.
Mm.
Yeah, not for the fight, but Macy was going with her family to Disneyland. And I told her, honestly, I don't think I could make it, but I would let you know the night before. And it depends if I could get ahead enough, I'll make it. And I got ahead enough. And so I'm looking at the flights, and because it was so last minute, the normal flights were like $1,200 to $1,300 round trip, but the first class round trip was like $1,800, and I did it.
I'm proud.
And I did it. Oh my gosh.
Very proud.
Graham Stephan exposed. Yeah. Title of the video.
Yeah, no. I was blown away. So in the flights, it's I got my own little cubby, like my own little cube. So I never was sitting next to another person, and the seat reclined all the way with its own little thing. I planned out a video. Mm. A full video on the airplane. And that's something that like usually I can't plan unless I'm like at my desk just in a silent room. And I did that on the airplane.
Oh, interesting. Exactly what I'm explaining.
So I made that money back probably at least 5 times over by planning. And I paid for the Wi-Fi. And so I had emails. I planned out sponsorships. I planned out the video. I got so much done in that time. It was incredible. So certain situations like that, I'll pay for that again. That was worth it.
I flew first class once internationally on British Airlines. To the UK, to London specifically for the Now You See Me 2 set or the film. And it changed flying for me. It ruined it.
That's how Jessica was.
I was
for
on
me.
A bed. Like I could sleep. Yeah. It was amazing. Never again.
Yeah. And they brought me food and it was so good. Like this food seemed like restaurant quality food.
Yeah.
And it was weird. At the first plane, because there was a layover, she's like, do you want champagne? I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And I felt bad.
They offered that on Jet Suite.
But I didn't want champagne, but I felt bad about like I paid for it. I should get champagne. I didn't get the champagne.
Congrats on the FTX sponsorship. Yeah. We're celebrating.
Yeah.
yeah. No, that's cool. The international flight though, I will say was like 10 grand, which I would never pay for.
I mean, you could also pay for it with credit card points. There are ways to level that
true,
up.
True. If you're a crazy spender.
No, not even sign up bonuses.
All right. You guys have $100 for the next 6 months. How do you allocate the $100? If the goal of the game is to in 6 months, who has the most money wins the game.
You should have asked the question. So how does the middle class live on $60,000 a year? That was one of Jeremy's questions. Just out of the blue.
How do you raise a family?
Hey, how do you raise a family?
Speaking of crypto, how do you raise a family on $60K a year?
So we have to make the $100 into as
much. You have to spend the
$100
and whoever
spend it?
Yeah, you have to invest it.
Gosh. How much time do we have?
6 months. End of the year.
Like, given the current climate?
Yeah.
I know what I'd do.
I'm curious, because I know the audience is probably looking at you
guys. And that's all you have is $100?
Well, $100 is just a metaphorical. $100,000. I didn't want to say a million.
Oh, gosh. No, it's got to be.
Not everyone has $1 million.
Come on.
What I'm saying is,
$100 million.
The point is percentage-wise, how are you allocating?
Oh, I thought, because I was about to say, with $100, you get a sign, some car wash detailing supplies, and you wash cars for like $20 a car.
That's fair.
That's what I would say. But then it's a lot different if it's like $100,000.
Yeah.
I mean, percentage-wise.
Well, the average audience, maybe they have $10,000. How are they allocating it?
Percentage-wise, I'd say probably 70% index funds, 20% real estate, maybe 10% risk, or it could be 5% risk, 5% cash.
How old is this hypothetical person?
25 to 35.
All right.
That's probably your audience, right, for Money Money?
Mostly, yeah.
18 to 35-ish.
Yeah. I would not do what Graham's doing. I would be much more cash-heavy. I'd be at least 50% cash heavy right now.
Yeah, just in
case. I would put 10K into I-bonds, get my guaranteed 9%, and then the rest I would split probably evenly among the stock market and Bitcoin and Ethereum. That's what I would do.
I would do exactly what I did when I was 18 years old. I'd spend it all, start a business.
Yeah, that too.
I really like that. I think trying to figure out how to...
It's just so difficult when you're like, you have to invest it.
Oh, yeah. Like, I saw a TikTok. It was actually really interesting. The window washing business. Mm. I don't know how real this is, but this kid does these side hustles and sees how much money he can make in a day. And he did incredibly well going door to door, washing windows for like $10 a window. And I forget how much money he made, but it was a significant amount to the point where like more people should be doing window washing businesses.
This was Jeremy's son, right?
You know what's a great flipping business? Going on eBay or Craigslist and buying things that you know about, like whether it's Pokemon cards or whatever it is, little collectible items, and then flipping them. Oh my gosh, people can flip, make a killing. It's amazing. Whatever it is, I don't exactly know what you should be buying, but whatever you think you know enough about.
I did that with Lego sets, Andre.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, some guy had some very expensive Lego sets that he didn't know like what he had, and I offered him a decent price, and yeah, it was insane.
You know what? I could see Legos making a huge comeback. Now even Macy's talking about doing Legos.
I bought Corey some Lego recently.
Really? What is it?
I think it was because of the
pandemic. So people were stuck inside. They wanted stuff to do. Lego had a huge marketing campaign, and they were selling like crazy. And it hit the nostalgia with the current generation, and I think it sold. And
do you think we're about to see a huge uptick and surge in Legos right now?
Are you consulting me as the Lego expert?
We went to the Lego store in Summerlin or whatever. The place was packed.
Yeah.
More than any other store, people were there buying Legos.
I'm hearing Legos is a better investment than Tattooed Chef. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, anything.
Jeremy's not here to defend himself now.
Sorry.
But I've heard something similar too. Certain Lego sets have outperformed the stock market too.
The $10,000 I would spend in social media. Obviously, we're in this game, but I still think that is the best.
What do you mean
ROI
when you say social media? What is that?
Everyone probably has a different path to go down. I feel like we're pretty strong in YouTube. Obviously, we've done pretty well there. Some people there might be real estate agents, and so they start TikTok. What if you get one client a month from your TikTok? Mm. Right, that's a big ROI. I think social media right now, I've never been more bullish on anything than social media.
Oh, 100%.
Do you feel like it's recession proof? And by recession proof, I mean that you can still sustain a full-time living no matter the economy.
I think it's proven to be the case.
I agree. I think we are very, very insulated and we are very fortunate. Maybe our sponsorship dollars drop.
It's like instead of a recession, then it's the algorithm or it's your own burnout and your own creativity. It's so mentally taxing to stay at that level.
Agreed.
It is.
Yeah. There are different difficulties, but I believe
But I just remember when the pandemic started, everyone lost their jobs. People got their pays cut and here we are making the most we've ever made. So in that sense, yes, it is recession.
Outside of getting our 3 copyright strikes or something, taking our channel down, how do you see your income dropping substantially to the point where you're worried, right? With YouTube, I don't know if there is a way.
Yeah, I won't.
Sponsorship dollars dropping, of course, but there's still going to be businesses that need to advertise. There's going to be something.
I think you're probably your own worst enemy on that. It's like either your ego gets in the way.
Above your means.
Yeah, there's probably some stuff that you are doing or you think that it's going to last forever and it's not.
Yes.
So
100%.
Yeah. That'd be my pick is social media, whether that's getting a camera, whether that's investing in a course.
I've encouraged people as recently as probably a couple of weeks ago just to do OnlyFans. I'm like, just do OnlyFans. You got the assets, do it. Like, don't ruin your career, but do it. You can make a killing at it.
Dude, the opportunities are endless.
Yeah.
for our age group, man, how fortunate I am to start YouTube and you put videos and at some point you start making income.
For sure.
And then there's people that are flipping stuff and then OnlyFans and this, and there's, you could have 100 people on your podcast talking
never
about a new way to make money.
Never before have we lived in a time where there have been so many options to make money in this world.
I had a guy, Mr. Organic, was a very popular video I made. Mm-hmm. I made about him, and he's a certain investing. He invests in his business, which is marketing and jewelry and flash. But to his credit, it kind of changed my perspective that we come from, I feel like, a little bit different background where it's stocks and real estate. These are the general, when people say, how do I learn how to invest? You're thinking about stock market, real estate, investing in yourself, investing in content, investing in, there's so many different ways that you can put money into something with an expected return, which is the definition of investing.
One of my friends recently told me he was planning on buying a Ferrari and a crazy house just to market his business, basically.
This sounds insane, but once you realize the money that influencers make, you can actually justify that.
No.
If you make, if you spend $6,000 a month, but it gets enough eyeballs, we're in this game. We know at a certain point, you're going to make
$6,000. That would work against it, certain people. Like with me, I feel like people look at that and be like, Graham, no, that's wasting money.
Agreed.
Yeah. That's my brand as well. But I'm just saying, if people want to do that, it works for some people.
Yeah. So he changed my perspective. Let me finish that thought in that he's all about flash, which I'm like, that's not the smartest way. But then you realize how much he's making from sponsorships and you go, wait a second, I'm buying real estate. I'm putting $100,000 to make $500 a month.
Here's an interesting question for you, Spencer. Mm-hmm. At what point, if someone is using that flash to market themselves and their business, even though the results may not be there, but that's how they're justifying, you know, having this extravagant lifestyle. At what point do you say and look at that person and say, well, that's you know, a guru and I want to make a video about them? When all in reality, they're trying to do is just market their business through that stuff.
It's one of the best ways to market your business, right?
Yeah.
I feel like I've done a pretty good job. Let's stick to sports bettors in particular, because that's the group of people I really go hard after. And a lot of them do sports bettors. Okay. Yeah, they're all frauds.
Really?
Yes, they're all frauds.
What's the fraud? Tell me what's a fraud? What's the scheme?
Sure. So they all have negative EV. Do you understand the idea of expectation of value in betting?
No,
so it's essentially, if you're placing a bet, do you understand the idea of a house edge, right? You've probably heard the term cliche. So what that means is over time,
it's going to be in
generally 5% in the house. If you put down $100 over time, the casino will walk with $5, just the way the game's played. Roulette, you have 37 options and the payout's 36. So that one out of 37 is their edge, yada, yada, yada. Well, with sports bettors, when you place a negative EV bet, which is a negative expectation of value, meaning your expectation of value is less than what you're investing. So if you're betting $100 on a bet where your minus EV 3%, you're actually only going to return $97 over time. And so all these guys are placing what are called minus EV
bets.
Interesting. So it actually gets really bad in that the more volume you play, it actually works against you. Because
can you give me an example of like a setup or a game where that would be the case?
So sports betting, what you generally have is you have favorites and underdogs. Are you familiar with sports betting in any way?
Not at all.
Okay. Yeah. So, let's say in a boxing match, I would be favorite over Graham. You would have, in order to make this even, right? You can't bet me to win. I'm just size advantage and reach advantage. And so you have to alter the odds to make it an even bet. So what the casinos look for is 50-50 action on either side. So at what point is the market efficient? And so if there's a 75% probability that I win, what the casino does is they place a bet where the money returned is only 70. And so you think it's like, oh man, I'm gonna bet on the favorite. Well, over time, you're actually only returning 70 cents, but the implied odds are 75. And so that's the negative edge that they have. And all these guys are flashy and they're promoting how much money they make and all this. And I'm betting 100,000. Casinos will ban you instantly if you have an edge. If I was playing a game with you and I had an edge coin flipping and I took your money over time, at some point you go, yo, I don't want to play this game.
No, that's what happens. Couldn't people say that I think this guy's going to win because he's got all this history and I know baseball really well and this team has an advantage over this. They have better defense. This one's not that. Couldn't someone know the sport that well to have a bit of an advantage?
You said, I think. That's the easiest tell.
Yeah. Okay.
Opinions don't play. No, opinions don't work. So these guys are like day traders. Okay. They're looking at line movements. And so real quick, because I don't want to bore the audience, but essentially one guy that I know wins millions. I did a video on this guy. I went behind the scenes of his operation. And so what he's looking for is if the line's 7, meaning one team is favored, you had Austin Eckler on. If Austin Eckler's team is favored by 7 points, that means if you think they're going to win by 8 or more, you bet his team. If you think the underdog's going to cover the 7, you add the 7, you bet the underdog, right? Okay. And I lost my train of thought.
He had an edge.
Sorry. So let's say the line, the efficient market line is 7. Well, if you're only laying 5, then you lay 5 and the line moves to 7, you have a 2-point advantage. And there's a statistical probability with every game. In football, 2 points could mean 8% edge. So that's your edge. And so if you're laying 5 and the real line moves to 7, that's an advantage. You do that over time, and that's your 5 to 8% edge.
Okay.
In basketball, it's commonly known, it's like 1 point in the NBA is worth 3% or 5%, 2 points. So if you're constantly getting better than the market, okay, you're going
to
win over time.
I think I understood about 5% of that.
It's pretty complicated. It's pretty fascinating.
I understand enough to where the statistics are obviously in that person's favor. Yeah. So what you're saying is they set up businesses and gambling businesses where yep, they are getting a slight advantage over their customers.
The ones who win. And you don't know them because they don't want to be known. They don't their face shown because they'll get banned.
How much of that is tied into crypto? Because I feel like it's always something like that. Where it's
I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
I'm not sure.
Are they all dealing with...
I think sports betting has been around forever.
Yeah,
I
but
think
crypto I've seen just... sports betting with like crypto nowadays.
No, that's just a new medium from which they can just payment. Yeah.
So anyway, what these guys do is they charge for their picks.
Okay.
So you're essentially, I'll show you how to win with my sports picks and I'll charge you $1,000 per month.
Well, also they have like courses explaining it.
No, not even. It's a service. They give out their picks. But these picks are actually... It'd be like if you were... If someone was a day trader and they were constantly losing money... And they were charging.
I see.
This is why, like, it's real fraud.
So the people that are doing these courses, are they in any way, shape, related or affiliated with the people running the business?
They are the business. It's just the sole operator.
It's the same person.
Yeah.
It's like imagine you could predict coin flips, and you're like, if Spencer's going to flip a coin, I'll tell you what it's going to be the next one. And I have an advantage. So like over 100 flips, you're going to make money.
That's what I'm saying. It's like a casino telling their customers what to bet on and then still having them lose.
Correct. Yes.
That's insane.
Yeah. It's a pretty rough business because then you have a lot of the kids are addicted and they get gambling. They're addicted to gambling. And so now they constantly look for the next guy.
Who falls for these kinds of scams? Is it
young male,
younger?
Yeah. They want that flash, man. That allure of the nice house and the Ferrari is really strong with these young kids, man. Okay. It's really sad to see. So they pay a guy, and this guy lost the money, and then they look for the next gambler.
Don't they learn pretty quickly that if they're not winning in like a month, that it's just like, hey, it doesn't work? Or is it just like a bad string of luck?
Something we will not relate to is gambling addiction. Very dark. Yeah, it is something we don't understand. We understand it's like over time. If I don't have an edge, I'm not going to invest.
No, I understand it. My parents were heavily into it.
Yeah,
so I've been through it hardcore.
Sad. They'll get down on their luck, and then they have $100, and it's the rush because they're after the rush. And
they'll lose an entire biweekly paycheck in a day.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah. It's crazy. Well, that's unfortunate.
Yes, that's an investing strategy we do not recommend.
Yeah, gambling. But there are legitimate gambling strategies that people obviously go to casinos, whether it's card counting or
whatever. I would say probably not.
House games do not have an edge. There's no edge.
Poker could be the only game. Yeah.
So what you're looking for is an edge, and the only edge you have is Texas Hold'em because you're playing. To my knowledge, there's not an edge. There's always house edge.
Yeah, you could count cards, but the casinos cracked down on that. Sure, so they do like
multiple decks.
Six shoe decks or whatever.
You'd probably be really good at that.
Yeah, I'll be all right.
Or they do single deck blackjack, but no mid shoe entry. So like you can't walk in halfway.
Mm.
And even then, if you are counting through that one deck, you don't get enough data to predict something. I mean, you could, but
yeah. So to give you an idea, the best sports gambler, one that I know, he's very private. You wouldn't know who he is. He has many accounts through many different people, and he has a source of communication where he says, hurry, bet this much on this, the home team -4, and everyone is laying the line. And there's some people that are so respected that when you lay the money, the line will move globally.
Oh, wow. So and he's legitimate.
No one knows who he is.
I've noticed that with some of those, because I bet on a few hockey games, that they change. And sometimes in the morning, they'll be like, okay, they're paying out this. And then by the afternoon, it's changed.
So that's where the plus EV comes in. If you know, if you can get ahead of time, that's your spread. And so the best guy in all time, Billy Walters, what he would do is he was actually so strategic that he knew his money was so well respected that he would make it known that he was putting $250,000 on the home team, -6. That would move the line to -7. Now he can get the other side +7. And now he's laying 6, but getting 7 on the other side. Wow. He now puts $500,000 on +7. I know that might be over your head, but he's basically manipulating the market. He has so much power. It'd be like if you had the ability, if you were so well respected that you could go to Tesla, you could make it known on your social media that I'm buying $10 million worth of Tesla tomorrow, and it would drive up, and then you could short it the next day for $20
million. Right.
And you're basically manipulating
the market. I'm just imagining Jeremy's TTCF position. Oh, probably moving the stock.
So that's how you gain an edge in sports betting. And these guys don't want to be known because then the casinos won't take their money.
Right. Wow.
Pretty fascinating stuff.
That is fascinating.
I love that. See, I thought that was the most interesting part. Yeah. I'm so curious about that.
Yeah, me too. I want to learn so much more about it.
Yeah,
it's like credit card churning, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'm fascinated.
So casinos, world. Yeah. And we are in Vegas. So,
actually, so the guy who edits my YouTube shorts for me, he just met a friend of his. It's like his aunt or something. And she's, I don't know, she's like 80 years old. She's made millions of dollars. She's still actively, basically what she's doing, she's getting those free-to-play coupons from casinos. And I don't know exactly what the strategy is, but this woman is basically living for free off of like coupons, free dinners, comps. She'll get physical things, gifts from casinos that she gives to other casinos, buy-ins, like all these credits. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
By the way,
like
if you ever want to appear in one of my videos, I want to do one soon where I play slots for 24 hours because I've been told there's what are called APs, which is advantage players. Yeah. Meaning they have a plus EV.
They churn this like $100 and it looks as though you've gambled $10,000 or whatever it is.
No, there's actually certain machines where there's a strategy and we cannot expose the actual strategy, okay. But I have people that are telling me that if I do not share the strategy, they will help me win at slots.
Wow. Let's see. I'd be very curious on that. But yeah, in regards to what you were saying, that's what I used to do. So when as soon as I turned 21, I had a buddy who would play a lot at the casinos, and we would go with him as like our plus ones, and the rooms would be free, the food would be free, everything is free, paid for, mm-hmm. and they just expect you to go there and gamble.
Play,
and
yeah.
sometimes he wins, sometimes he loses, but you know, there could be times they pay for everything and he wins.
Yeah,
they're in the volume business.
Yeah. This lady knows exactly which casinos are having those favorable.
So that's
odds.
Now plus EV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, plus
because
EV.
Because if you're receiving comps, you play 300, but you get 500
exactly.
in return. It's
exactly.
like
yeah,
it's
incredible.
You know, they send, and once you put your name on the list, they send you vouchers to come back. It's like here's a free $50 bet if you come back this week.
Yes.
You know, and your free room or some. But it's good. I mean, if you could go to Vegas, control yourself, yeah. and enjoy the free benefits, like we would play enough. At 50-50, basically craps, like the ideal strategy with craps. And then we'd do that long enough to get the buffet for free.
That's
and it,
cool,
our net cost was so small because when you play craps correctly, it could be like a 50-50. So we don't really lose, we
I
don't win.
I
want to
learn
but,
so much more about this. Like, there's no one yeah. I could ask.
So in sports gambling, the best casino on the strip or in Las Vegas, their take is about 3% of volume. That is the tightest margin book. The best books, the one best meaning profitable, is 6-12%. So if you have an edge of 6-12%, now all you want is volume. Hey, Andre, come to my casino yeah. this weekend. Why do you give free comps to the room? Because the room wasn't occupied anyway, but you want volume at the tables.
Yeah.
Because if you have a 5% edge on every dollar,
right.
come on, baby, we love you. This is why they love the millionaires coming and playing there. Oh, yeah, you want a flight out to Vegas?
Yeah.
Because they'll make more in the
yeah. in the edge. You want to stay away from the strip. Like, I refuse to do that. Their blackjack pays 6-5 instead of, you know, 2-3. There's so many things that the strip just gets you on. You want to go to the local spots.
Yeah.
10x no, odds on craps is what yeah. you want. Yeah.
That's cool. There's a whole new world I want to learn.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
The best is $5 craps with 10x odds. There was a casino. I think it was Green Valley. This is way back in the day, but that's what they used to do. That's wow. what I would do.
I think it. We've yeah. learned in this episode that Graham is a degenerate gambler.
No, I'm just kidding.
Enough to get the free stuff.
Enough to get the free Dogecoin
yeah.
with FTX.
Yeah. With that said, guys, thank you so much for watching. I'll link to your information down below in the description for anyone who wants to follow Spencer.
I'm the only Spencer Cornelia.
Yeah, this is true.
Pretty easy to find.
Very easy to find. Your information will be down below in the description. You can sign up for FTX US, get free crypto on every trade you make over $10.
And you can buy Spencer's course down below.
Gambling secrets.
Casino gambling
Casino
secrets.
All right. Well, with that said, guys, guys, until next time.
Peace.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger. For the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.